The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells,
about residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there,
and the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle, stories about life on the inside told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
For Monday, August 2nd, 2021, it's The Brief from WABE. I'm Martha Dalton, in for Jim Burris. The Biden administration's top health official says his agency is working as quickly as possible to review Georgia's request for a limited Medicaid expansion. During a visit to Atlanta today, Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra expressed skepticism about requiring work for access to Medicaid health coverage. Sam Whitehead reports.
It's not clear when HHS officials might complete their review of Georgia's plan or whether they'll allow it to go forward. But Becerra did tell reporters that he doesn't want work to become a barrier to accessing health care.
It seems kind of ironic that if you're trying to make sure you're taking care of your family and also trying to look for good work, that you might find yourself losing access to Medicaid because of requirements related to work.
Becerra's agency has recently blocked work requirements for Medicaid in other states. Georgia's plan to expand Medicaid health coverage to some low-income residents who can work 80 hours a month was initially approved by the Trump administration. The state also wants to cut ties with the Obamacare enrollment website, healthcare.gov. That plan also requires HHS approval. Sam Whitehead, WABE News.
Residents of Fulton County will have another opportunity to apply for rental assistance. The county's reopening applications today, just 2 days after a nationwide moratorium on evictions expired. Stephanie Stokes has more.
The money is available to people who live within Fulton but outside the city of Atlanta. Each of the biggest local governments in Metro Atlanta is in charge of distributing rental assistance to its own residents. And all still have a long way to go, even though a federal ban on evictions ended Saturday. In response, DeKalb County courts decided to halt all evictions for another 60 days. Fulton County Commissioner Natalie Hall called on her county to follow.
Our residents not only deserve it, but they need it.
Fulton has paid out more than $8 million in rental assistance funding. More than $30 million remains. Georgia as a whole received more than $1 billion. Stephanie Stokes, WABE News.
Cleanup continues on St. Simon's Island, where oil from a wrecked cargo ship is staining the beaches and marshes. Fletcher Sams is the executive director of the environmental group Altamaha Riverkeeper. He says crews are out removing oil from the sand, but beaches aren't closed.
We're seeing people come into contact with oil up and down the beach, walking through the oil to get to the water.
The source of the oil is the Golden Ray, a car carrier that's been stuck off the coast for nearly 2 years. Wreck removal teams were working on lifting out a section of the ship when the oil escaped. Dragon Con's parade will only be open to attendees of the conference this year. Typically, tens of thousands of people come out to watch the annual parade down Peachtree Street. Officials say the changes are due to concerns about COVID. Media Engagement Director Dan Carroll joined WABE's Closer Look today to talk about the approach.
Parades have historically, going back to the Spanish flu epidemic, parades have been notorious for being super spreader events, and we want to limit that as much as possible.
Dragon Con will run in Atlanta from September 2nd to the 6th. The con will also take a hybrid approach this year and will stream content from the event virtually. Georgia registered more than 6,300 new COVID cases over the weekend. The highest rate of infection per population is in South and Southeast Georgia, in areas where vaccination rates are low. Hospitals in that region are showing more than 20% of their patients now have COVID. In Metro Atlanta, it's 11%. Some droughts form slowly, dry month after dry month, and others develop all of a sudden. In parts of the Southeast, farmers can find themselves without enough water in a matter of days. As Molly Samuel reports, those fast-forming droughts are now the subject of increasing research to figure out better ways to detect them and to support farmers when their crops are affected.
Murray Campbell grows peanuts and cotton on 1,200 acres of land in southwest Georgia.
I've been farming 43 years.
He's driving around the farm in his pickup in a midsummer moment when the cotton is just about to flower.
Next week, you could see cotton blooms. And the blooms are white in the morning. They pollinate about 11 o'clock. And by late that afternoon, they're turning pink.
Campbell's farm is mostly irrigated, and in this part of the county, the soil can hold on to some moisture. But he also farms in a sandier area down the road, a place where the soil doesn't hold on to moisture.
We have a saying that I've heard all my life, so I'm going to tell you what it is. We always say we're 3 days from a drought.
Meaning, if you even go 3 days without rain, the crops there will feel it. And farmers can find themselves heading into what's called a flash drought, a rapidly developing drought intensified either by high temperatures or by the rain just disappearing. John Christie is an atmospheric science professor at the University of Alabama at Huntsville. He says there was a flash drought in the Southeast in 2016, and the U.S. Drought Monitor was slow to pick up on how quickly some crops were getting stressed.
Many of the counties here in the South did not qualify for federal assistance, even though literally the news on the ground was people were trucking in hay because the hay had not been able to develop, and farmers were in terrible situations as a result.
He says that spurred a research project with the goal of getting better at detecting and measuring flash droughts so they can give farmers more of a heads up about them and to help the federal government recognize them and provide assistance when farmers need it. The project has researchers in Alabama, Florida, and Georgia using satellite data and in-the-ground soil moisture sensors.
So that's embedded here.
University of Georgia professor George Valides points out a soil sensor planted in a peanut field at the Stripling Irrigation Research Park in southwest Georgia. The sensor is mostly underground. It feeds moisture information into a radio transmitter, which sends it to a computer and up into the cloud.
Inside this conduit are the cables that communicate with the electronics package.
With a smartphone app, farmers can see when their crops need water. A lot of farmers already use similar tools, but for this flash drought project, Valides and his team are also designing models and maps to show when specific crops are affected.
You know, every week update those maps and say, okay, this is what we're seeing in terms of flash drought.
The research in this project will take another year. Farmer Murray Campbell says he's always expecting a flash drought to happen at some point.
I mean, what they call a flash drought now, I think my granddaddy would just call it, it's dry, it hadn't rained.
Like Campbell says, flash droughts are not a new phenomenon. But bigger picture, Campbell says he does feel like he's seen weather patterns change here, with wet times getting wetter and dry times getting drier, which is in line with what the National Climate Assessment forecasts for the Southeast.
I think you could probably find more and more farmers that would say, okay, yeah, I believe climate changes. Something's happening.
It might be tough to ever get weather forecasting to the point where a farmer like Campbell can know if and when it'll rain at his farm on any given day. But continued research into flash drought could help him be better prepared for when it does dry up fast. Anyway, he says, if farming was easy, everybody would be doing it. Molly Samuel, WABE News.
Reporting for this story was made possible by a grant from the Institute for Journalism and Natural Resources. And among the venues that have lasted from the 1996 Atlanta Olympics is the swimming pool at Georgia Tech. Even after 25 years, it remains state of the art. And as Emil Moffitt reports, that's because of technology that still provides a competitive edge for those who swim there.
When most people watch Olympic swimmers, they mainly focus on the athletes. Georgia Tech professor Judd Reedy and his students, however, look at how the pool is designed.
The course that I teach is material science engineering of sports. So we cover helmets and shoes and the playing surfaces.
And pools. One case study of how engineering and sports come together is the Macaulay Aquatic Center at Georgia Tech, originally built for the 1996 Olympic Games.
There's a variety of different ways that you can make a pool fast, and they all have to do with keeping the wake from the opposing competitor from influencing you.
And Reedy says that means maintaining calm waters on the pool's surface. That's why it's 9 feet deep all the way around. It recirculates the water from the bottom instead of the sides like a normal pool. It also features gutters that immediately trap waves so they don't slosh back toward the swimming lanes. The result, Reedy says, is the fastest pool in the U.S.
The easiest way to judge that is records, not just personal records, but NCAA records or national records.
And the Olympic pool at Georgia Tech will be back on the national stage next March when it hosts the NCAA Swimming Championships. Emil Moffitt, WABE News.
That's it for The Brief. You can find more local news at WABE.org. I'm Martha Dalton, and for Jim Burris, thanks for listening.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Local, state, national politics. WABE and NPR have the coverage you need. I'm Jim Burris, host of WABE's All Things Considered. Whether it's on the air at 90.1, streaming online, or connecting through our mobile app, WABE keeps you on top of election 2024 in what's sure to be a pivotal year in politics. And for candidates and ballot information, visit our election hub at wabe.org/election2024.